Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The latest book by John Boyne is out, and it is the latest book, but is the completion of a set of four: the Earth, Fire, Water, and Air. I was going to say trilogy because I can't think of the quartet. The quartet. The last being Air, that to some extent it I'm right in saying, John, that it stands alone as a work in and of itself, but it does tie together some trailing wires from the rest of the quartet.
Yeah, that was the idea at the start, that the four books would all be standalone stories, so they could be read individually, but that a minor character from each becomes the narrator of the next one, and they share a common theme.
And the common theme being sexual abuse, but from the point of view of perpetrator, victim,
enabler, and complicity. So each a different crime in each book. But so the first book, Water, was from a woman who was questioning whether she has enabled these crimes to take place. The second book, Earth, was somebody who was complicit. The third book, Fire, was from the perspective of a perpetrator, a female perpetrator. And this final book, Air, is from the perspective of a victim. But there, as I say, there are four different crimes, but just looking at the theme of sexual abuse from different perspectives.
And what's interesting is that you don't, particularly in Air, you don't dwell on the abuse itself. It's the sort of the sequelae. It's the impact on their thinking, their lives, their capacity to form relationships, all of that, rather than the prurience of the abuse.
Oh, yeah. In fact, one of the major parts of Air is because the narrator is now in his 40s, and this experience happened to him when he was 14, but he's traveling with his own 14-year-old son. And so that boy has now reached an age where he is, where the father, our narrator, is incredibly worried about him, almost over the top worried about him. And the boy is like, well, you know, why can't you just let me be? And he's getting to the point where he wants to tell his son his story to make them closer, but also to warn him about the dangers that exist in the world.
And of course, the big challenge with the son is the fact of the boy living in a world where now social media is a thing, that he is almost more easy to be predated upon than the father was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think we all know that. We see it in the newspapers. We hear it on the news that children of that age are under so much pressure anyway with social media in a way that you or I weren't when we were in school. And it's almost an easy ground for somebody who wants to be abusive or be a predator to take advantage of them. You know, the kids are also at that age where they are keeping secrets from their parents. It's natural. You know, you're changing, puberty has hit, you don't want your parents to be involved in every aspect of your life. But that's what makes it easy for somebody in that sense. And that's why Aaron, the narrator here, is so conscious of the dangers that are out there and wants to protect his son against any possible abuse.
Although I suppose the counterpoint is that with that comes a better understanding. I read your own piece about the abuse suffered by your peers and yourself in school. And one of the things you talked about was how the boys would mock the assumed victims of the abuser, the pets of the abuser. Yeah. And that meant that not only did the boys know, but there must have been people in staff, faculty, everybody else who was aware or had wind, yet nothing was done. I'm assuming that has changed.
Oh, I think that's definitely changed. In the real world, that has changed. On the online world, it's different. Sometimes you hear about kids who have very, very sadly committed suicide because they've been they've caught in a sting where maybe they've sent pictures to somebody and it's not who they think they're sending pictures to. And then they get blackmailed and they get told, oh, we're going to send these to everybody on your contact list. And a child that age doesn't have the sense not to send the pictures in the first place, but also doesn't have the emotional resources to deal with the consequences of that. They're humiliated, embarrassed, ashamed, and they can't see any way out of it. And they're too traumatized to go to a parent or an uncle or an aunt or a grandparent, somebody who might be able to help them and say, look, we can sort this. We can sort this. This is not the end of the world. And you can understand why that would be. So the dangers that were there when we were kids are maybe not so there, but what they're facing now is very, very different.
To what extent is Air in the Quartet the most personal of the books? Because of perspective, it's the only one you share, the perspective of somebody who has been on the receiving end of abuse.
To an extent it is, but I think all four come together in some way for that, for me, in a personal way. Because Aaron's experience is different than mine. Firstly, he's heterosexual, who was abused when he was 14 by a woman, which was not, none of which is my experience. He has a child who he is caring for, which I don't have a child. So I think all four in some ways were a way of me exploring the whole subject. It's not just about that. Strangely enough, though, what I do feel that this book has, which the other three don't, is, and it was always my intention, this is actually the lightest of the four. The other three are very, very dark. But it was always my intention that when I got to the victim story, I wanted it to be, in a way, I wanted to be about a survivor, not a victim. That you can be a victim when you are a child, but you can choose not to be a victim anymore. You can choose to survive something. And that's what Aaron's story is very much about. Getting out the other side of it and making sure it doesn't happen again, but not allowing the trauma and pain that he has suffered once in his life to overshadow every day of his life from then on.
Is that your wrestle? Is that your story?
That I think that would be, yeah. Because, you know, I've spoken before about how the hardest times for me with that were in my 20s, when I was, you know, coming out to people anyway, but also dealing with the fact that I had this complicated feeling about being both gay, but having the first unwanted sexual experience of my life at the hands of a man. And even though I was smart enough to know that's not what makes somebody gay, there was also that part of my brain that felt very angry about all of that. And it was very difficult to draw the two apart in my head.
Angry that you thought that it was causative in your sexuality, or that it was?
Yeah. You know, even though I knew it wasn't, you can tell yourself you can know something while at the same time wonder and think. I mean, let's face it; it would have been it's easier not to be gay. You know, to just grow up with, you know, 9 out of 10 people being potential people in your dating pool as opposed to one. It's just easier. So there was times in my 20s I was extremely angry. I couldn't have written books like this or, you know, A History of Loneliness, which I wrote about the church before. I couldn't have written that in my 20s. I needed to be in my 40s then and now in my early 50s to have that perspective, to have to just have a different life and to have matured in a way.
The parallels between the book and your own experience, one of the things that you treat of a lot in the book is the impact that it has on a capacity to form relationships, to share intimacy, the sort of the lingering decade-long follow-on from the childhood abuse. Is that rooted in personal experience?
Yeah, definitely, because it took me a long time to be able to form healthy relationships. I would say until I was about, you know, 33, all my relationships in my 20s were quite self-destructive, but they were also, I always say, under cover of dark. You know, not even though I was out to people, there was a sort of still secrecy about being gay then. It wasn't as accepted, I suppose, as it is now. You couldn't possibly walk down the street holding hands with somebody or kiss on the street or something, and you'd be running a serious risk of injury. And if you are told from a very young age that something is wrong and something should be kept covered, you cannot help but have that, you know, pour into your soul in some way that you never quite move past it. You're always slightly conscious of any potential for trouble. You know, it's a funny thing that only last week, you know, I was saying goodbye to my partner in Dundrum, you know, which is near where I live, and just kind of gave each other a peck on the cheek, you know, before, or peck on the lips before he got into his taxi. And then he told me the other day that the taxi then drove down and pulled up at the lights, and two guys followed up and knocked on the window and asked him, was he all right, that they'd seen what had happened. And he said, did that guy just, you know, grab you and kiss you or something? And my partner was like, no, that's my partner. Yeah, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? And you think, my God, it's 2025. And you can still get something like that. I would still be very conscious of it on the street.
And what, it was so out of the norm of their world that they assumed it was some form of assault, what they saw.
I think so, yeah. They thought so. And they literally ran down the street to the taxi. I know that's mad, but it's true story.
So in doing the quartet and in treating of that topic, was there a desire to box it off and say, that is it now, done, I have a personal and artistic closure, or am I reading too much in?
No, you're reading exactly in. I think the phrase I use in my head is, I think I've written myself out of the story now. That I've written one long novel, History of Loneliness, about this, and four novellas about this subject. And I think I've said all that I want to say on the subject, or all that I have to say on it. I think I'd be retreading old ground. I feel the same way, actually, with, you know, I've written three books set during the Holocaust, and I feel I've written myself out of that subject as well. I've said all I can say. And, you know, hopefully I've got 30, 40 years in me, and there's so many other books and types of books that I want to write. So I would be surprised if I return to this. That said, if a great idea, if I found a way in that no one's ever done before, and I thought this would be a really special book, I would do it. But I'm not looking for that now. I feel these four books kind of say it all for me.
And your hope in terms of the impact they would have on a reader is what?
Well, my first hope always is an emotional response. You know, I always consider myself an emotional more than an intellectual writer, that I write from the heart more than the head. I hope people would read these four and think about these four aspects of abuse in different ways. We have to understand why abusers do things if we're not going to let it happen again. That's, you know, not an original thought, but it's a true thought. So particularly with the earlier ones here, with the lady who is enabling it, and then the third one, somebody who is committing those acts, we also see their backstories, what led them to this place. So we have to be more open to the signs of that. And, you know,
is there commonality in that? Can you distill down people's motivation for abuse?
I don't think you can't get to an answer on that. But what I would say is that I do sometimes wonder about the people who are, say, in their 80s and in jail now for abuse. So of that generation. There is that part of me that thinks, I wonder what happened to them. And that's not to justify anything. It's not to make light of their crimes, because people who are victims of crimes do not, they make their own decision not to commit those crimes themselves. But those who do commit them, I do wonder what happened to them. And
you think there has to be a what happened?
I think 9 times out of 10, I'm not a psychologist, but I think 9 times out of 10, yeah, probably. And again, that's not to justify anything. Like,
does it make it easier to forgive? Like in your instance, does believing that something caused that?
Yeah.
Does it?
I think it does, because you have to be human. You have to have, I want to be somebody who has sympathy. You know, whether I always do or not, I don't know. But I want to be somebody who can forgive and who can say, God, you know, well, I wonder what happened to him. Yeah, I wonder what happened to her. And was their life destroyed before it even begun? I mean, it sounds terrible saying it, because I don't want to come across like I'm justifying anything, because like we all are responsible for our own actions and have to take responsibility for them. But I'm not sure that anybody is born 100% evil. I mean, who knows? What do I know? I don't want to think anybody is born 100% evil.
But does the shift from being a survivor of abuse themselves into being a predator, into being a perpetrator, that there's free will involved there,
there is.
It seems a big leap to go to the point of, well, I can forgive that choice because it was rooted in some trauma.
No, and I'm certainly not saying I can forgive anybody's choice in that. It's unforgivable. What I'm saying is that if we understand how those things happened and why they happened, if we can help people who come out the other side of it, that the person whose mind has been literally so perverted by the experience they might have had, maybe we can help them and stop the abuse going forward. I'm in absolutely no way suggesting that that is understandable.
You talked about having written yourself out of this story in a more general setting. Maybe I'm stepping across a line, but I get the sense that you are happier in your own skin now than you have been.
I think I'm at the best point in my life I've ever been. I feel very happy in my career, very happy in my personal life, very happy with my family. My parents are of a great age and still healthy. In general, even though I write, quite sad books a lot of the time, I'm actually a very happy-go-lucky kind of guy in real life. I'm pretty cheerful most of the time. But, I feel like I've gone through some bad things, but so has everybody in life. I've had my share of ups and downs. But right now, at the age of 53, honestly, life couldn't be better. I just feel, I feel very happy.
Now, I know this may be an odd worry, but is your muse therefore at risk? Do you need angst? Do you need to write from a position of pain? Do you need to have unresolved emotional baggage?
I don't think I do, because writing has been part of my life since I was a small child. And there hasn't been a day gone by since I was a teenager where I haven't been engaged on fiction in some way. And that's been through the bad times and through the good times. So I feel writing is, for me, almost like breathing, that no matter whether I'm sad or I'm happy, I'm going to have to breathe. And writing is the same thing. I still love it, you see. I've always said I'm not one of those writers who says, oh, I wish I didn't have to do it. I hate it. I don't. I absolutely love it. There's nothing better than seeing a free day on the calendar and I know that I can just write all day. It makes me very happy.
And I can't remember who had the line. Was it Dorothy Parker or somebody had the line that says, I don't like writing, I like having written. But you actually enjoy sitting down, the act of dedicating hours to typing
Well, certainly after the first draft, it's the hardest. That one is the one that I'd still enjoy it, but not as much as everything after that. Once I have like this big block of pages and I know my story's in there somewhere, that I've got my beginning, middle and end and a few characters, then honestly, it's just great fun. I really, it's like a big puzzle.
John, thank you very much for coming in. Always a pleasure. John Boyne, the final in the quartet of Earth, Fire, Water is out, that being Air. John, thanks again.
Thank you.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.